Hello and welcome to the podcast. I am Aaron, and with me, as always, is Ethan.
Hey.
Hey, hey, hey. We haven't done this in a while, and actually, last week was a Red Phone Zone first. We actually let catastrophic equipment failure stop us from recording.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's been times when we've had catastrophic equipment failure that stop us from podcasting. We just didn't know we were recording it. Or weren't recording
it. Yeah, I do believe that was the first time that actually we didn't record because of it.
So. Yeah, I mean, we attempted and lost half of shows and three quarters of shows.
But we've at least, you know, done it.
Yeah. Even if it's...
Yeah. And we were off for an extra week because of Thanksgiving. I was out with my fiance visiting family in Baltimore, so...
Yeah, Russia.
Yes, in Baltimore, Russia.
Baltimore, Russia. Cool, cool, cool. So it was a good Thanksgiving.
Yes, it was a good Thanksgiving.
Excellent. Well, this time around, we do have our ongoing movie genre discussion where we just talk about specific genres, what we like about them, and films from that genre that supports our claims about why we like it. This is always chosen by our guest host. Tonight, our guest host is Mr. Ethan, also Ethan. Hello, Ethan.
Hello. Hello, I'm Ethan.
Oh, this
Ethan. No, I am Ethan.
No, I am Ethan. Okay, I've been Ethan longer than you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm the, Ethan, too.
On the show, or...
Ethan just, I will call you version 2.
I'm going to call you Slagathor.
I'm the much cooler younger
version. So I'm Ethan, he's Slagathor?
Slagathor.
Okay.
Okay, Slagathor, so you chose coming-of-age films. This should be interesting, because... we are significantly older than you, and so I think...
We came of age before long before you did.
Yeah, way presumably. Before you did. And then Ethan came of... Ethan and I are roughly the same age, but we came from different, I guess we'd call it, economic situations, so I would imagine that we have different ideas. So it's going to be an interesting discussion. Well, at least in my mind. But before we do any of them, we do have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. It's when we talk about news, it's relevant to us geeks. Mm-hmm. We haven't done the show in like 16 years, so we got a little bit of news to cover.
Well, the first thing I've got is the David Yates and the Doctor Who feature film malarkey. Doctor Who, for the first time in decades, Doctor Who is supposedly headed to the big screen. Variety reported that the four-time Harry Potter director David Yates is planning to bring the Time Lord to theaters everywhere, though apparently not for a few years. He said, "We're going to spend 2 or 3 years to get it right. We're looking at writers now. It's the longest-running science fiction series of all time, and you guys who listen to the show know that we're huge fans, at least Aaron and I. It celebrates its 50th anniversary next year.
Damn.
The original series ran a record 26 seasons with the popular continuation resuming in 2005 and is currently prepping its sixth series. It says sixth series, but I think the sixth series is done now. So, I mean, they're going to have the seventh series, which I'll talk about here in a bit.
Okay, now I know that you're not happy about this idea. But we'll get into that in a minute.
This is what he says is David Yates said it needs quite a radical transformation to take it to the bigger arena, said Russell T. Davies and then Stephen Moffat have done their own transformations, which were fantastic. We have to put that aside and start from scratch. And, of course, the fan reaction to that was burn him at the stake. And
I'm apprehensive. I do not think...
I just don't think they need to make a movie.
They don't need to, but it could be great. I mean, I'm not throwing this idea out upon hearing it. Obviously, the whole idea about the, you know, retrofitting it for a movie and stuff, it's not going to sound good to people who have been loving the show for years and years and years. But it could be new and fresh and exciting. I don't... David Yates did a good job with the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, right after this, the BBC released a statement saying that, you know, this is still in development. This isn't – nothing's set in stone. Yeah. That, you know, obviously their BBC is not going to be dumb and not listen to fans on this. And fan reaction to this initial bit was a bit heated.
Yeah, but they overreact everything. It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. If it does happen, I'm not, you know, standing here right now saying that that's a horrible idea. I'd want to hear more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would they be developing it for the Matt Smith doctor? Would it be a different doctor? Excuse me.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, because we also have the few Doctor Who movies with
Peter Cushing,
when it was, you know, which Doctor, aren't part of
Doctor
continuity.
Doctor MD Who.
Yeah.
I mean, he was actually a doctor. His name was Doctor. His last name was Who.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was a completely different thing, and they were horrible. But, you know,
oh, yeah.
Who knows? Doctor Who is great, and if this happens and it maybe gets it more to the masses, and
mm-hmm.
that could be a good thing. I mean, I'm trying to be apprehensive. I'm trying to be optimistic
about
it. But I am
sure.
apprehensive. All right,
well,
now, Ethan Slagathor, are you a fan of Doctor Who or not?
Slagathor is a fan of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I love Doctor Who.
It's a great show. I still haven't watched the newest season of it yet, but I plan on doing that over Christmas break.
I haven't watched the Matt Smith season. I mean, I've watched a little bit of the Matt Smith stuff, and I've really liked what I've seen. But, you know,
It's a different breed. Yeah, it's a different doctor, so I mean...
Yeah, yeah. I still stand firm, and I hold up the trash can lid to stop the tomatoes from hitting me, but I prefer Eccleston to
sure.
to Tennant, and Tennant's great. I just liked Eccleston a lot.
And you know, my philosophy of it is I think each doctor has his own thing to bring to it, and so I really don't want to say this one's my favorite over all the others.
I just think I probably like the episodes of Tennant. I mean, I still think my favorite Doctor Who episode I've ever seen is probably still Dalek. Because I loved his reaction to seeing that Dalek. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, there wasn't back in the Quattar Nebula, we had an awful battle, so therefore I'm scared of you. It was just, you know, his reaction, like, no. It's like, oh my God, it's a Dalek. And just something about the performance, you know, without spelling it all out, you can see that there's great fear of the Daleks for good reason. And I thought that was really cool. I really enjoyed it. And I want my own Dalek still. That has not gone away.
Let's see. More news. Heatvision reported that both Legendary Pictures' Godzilla and Universal Studios' Asteroids have just gotten new writers. Max Borenstein, who turned in a script for The Art of Steel at Warner Brothers, is penning the new screenplay for Godzilla, which will be distributed by Warner Brothers. David Goyer previously worked on the script.
Oh, yeah.
Borenstein also co-wrote the upcoming Seventh Son, starring Jeff Bridges, Ben Barnes, and Julianne Moore. Gareth Edwards, the guy who did the foreign film Monsters, will direct Godzilla.
I saw that.
Legendary,
I didn't like it, but I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously going in a different direction in the whole Matthew Broderick mess.
So it's not going to suck. That's
not going to go that far.
Well, I mean, they're going to try to not.
This is Hollywood.
Suck. So this is going to be Godzilla. It's not going to be Godzilla
Some
Jr.
big lizard thing running around
the
city.
Well, the big ass iguana, and then, you know, 90% of it was its babies.
Yes.
Is it going to be kind of like the kind of King Kong-style remake, you know, where they...
Way too long and
not enough...
33 hours long and way too much money spent on it?
You know, that's...
Maybe.
I
don't know.
That's one of those movies that pushes my thing, that passion goes a long way. Because you can tell that he loved everything about it, but... Man, it was that far from just being horrible.
Mm-hmm. Legendary's Thomas Tull and John Joshny are producing, along with Dan Lin, Roy Lee, and Brian Rogers. Now, Universal's adaptation of the Atari video game Asteroids...
Naturally.
...will be written by Evan Spilipduplos. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that again. Matt Lopez, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, originally worked on the script. The new writer on the upcoming was a writer on the upcoming Snow White and the Huntsman.
That looks stupid.
Oh,
is
I think
the,
it looks
is
good.
Is that thing that has
with Charlize Theron and?
That looks no. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of that thing with Julia Roberts.
That's a different Snow White thing. That's coming.
That looked horrible.
I think Snow White and the Huntsman actually looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, the one with Thor. The one with Julia Roberts. there was a trailer for it on the Muppets, and it looked horrible. I wanted to throw shit at the screen.
I saw that same trailer.
The Huntsman one. No, I've seen a trailer for that. It looks whatever.
Yeah. The plot line for Asteroids has evolved into the story of two estranged
rocks.
Two estranged brothers that must team up to save Earth from an alien race.
From Asteroids.
Well, this reminds me of the whole the Battleship movie coming out next year.
Yes.
I can't wait.
I don't remember space aliens being in that game.
I don't remember.
Not even the electronic talking version.
I don't remember Liam fucking Neeson being in it either. So.
But I'll see it because I like Liam fucking Neeson. Yeah, so, that's a bonus. I could care less about everything else, but.
viable movies is to put space.
Speaking of somewhat lukewarm ideas, is Bryan Singer is going to direct, executive produce the Munsters reboot on television.
You know, when I think the Munsters, I think Bryan Singer.
I do too. He's going to do it on NBC from Pushing Daisies creator Brian Fuller. The project is billed as an imaginative reinvention of the classic comedy series as a visually spectacular one-hour drama.
Oh, really? What is the most recent thing Singer's done?
He was a producer on First Class.
Oh,
wow. I think the last thing he directed was Superman Returns.
Hmm.
I think.
Wasn't Valkyrie after
Valkyrie's
that?
Before that.
Did you see that movie?
Yeah.
Piece of shit. I did not like that movie. Let's talk Tom Cruise in it. He's almost always screws everything up.
Let's see. Fuller and NBC made an attempt on the project last year, but the network passed on it. The newer version is said to be a, quote, edgier and slightly darker take exploring the origins of Herman and Lily Munster.
I kind of like not knowing.
Okay, whenever someone describes their work as edgy, it's going to be bad.
Sure.
So, yeah.
One should not describe their own work as edgy. No. Other people should describe. Our podcast is edgy.
Yes, we're so edgy. And speaking of edgy, we talked briefly about this before we recorded, but Booster Gold is going to be a sci-fi channel or syphilis channel, however you want to pronounce it, has ordered a pilot based on Booster Gold from Fringe writer Andrew Kreisberg has been asked to write the pilot.
Huh.
Now, I'm torn on this because sci-fi has a better track record with TV than with movies, but still.
My thing about it I saw this article too. And I got excited halfway through. It's like, pilot for Booster Gold order. Fuck yeah. Buy Sci-Fi Channel. Oh, no.
Yeah. And it strikes me as DC's really trying to push the character more because he's going to become more important in this new continuity.
Yeah, maybe.
Because of the whole time travel business and wackiness going on. You know, when they reset everything again.
Sure. You know, I hope it's really good. I mean, obviously I have my doubts, but, and, you know, I still want fucking Sean William Scott to play Booster Gold. I mean, has he blown up so much to where he's too good to be on a TV show?
No, I don't think he's getting much work anyway.
Well, also, he's probably like 70 or, well.
Something like that.
Older than
I think he's probably appearing in the new American Reunion or something, that American Pie sequel that is actually apparently coming with
American,
years.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Really?
Because it's been 10 years since the first one.
Is that all?
Apparently, I don't freaking know.
Huh,
or care.
I don't care, but
Sony and Film District have teamed on the Evil Dead remake. We talked a bit about the Evil Dead remake not too long ago. But Sony Pictures Worldwide Acquisitions and Film District have partnered with Ghost House Pictures on a worldwide, excluding the United Kingdom and France, for Sony Pictures to distribute
a worldwide
the
deal,
of Evil
except
Dead.
For UK and France.
So fuck you, Britain and France. You guys suck.
Yeah.
Or something.
Ethan at Redphones.
Yes, Ethan at Redphones.com. The original producing partners Rob Tappert, Bruce Campbell, and Sam Raimi are going to produce. Ghost House Pictures partners with Joe Drake and Nathan Kane as executive producers. The movie is directed by Fede Alvarez, and this is his first. I looked at his stuff online, and this is his first theatrical.
Yeah, he got
major motion picture. He's done a lot of shorts.
He got he got a sight unseen contract from Raimi because of something he did. I forget what it is. It must have been one of his shorts.
Apparently, he's also writing the script with someone named Roto Sayugues. Roto Sayugues.
Okay.
Academy Award-winning screenwriter Diablo Cody did revisions on the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost House Film District
now,
and SPWA are committed to renewing the franchise and have it on a fast track to a 2012 production start. And we know that Ash is not going to be in it.
Right.
Which is probably a better
idea. But Bruce Campbell will be as something.
Probably not.
I thought he said he was. I thought he was going to have a cameo.
He might have a cameo. I don't think that all depends on various things, you know.
Well, you know, I'm not one to poo-poo an Oscar, but I always hate it when they refer to Diablo Cody as an Academy Award-winning screenwriter, because she won her Academy Award in the year that the fucking writers were on strike.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a scab, and that movie sucked.
Which movie was it?
Juno.
Oh, okay, right.
So, I mean, okay, Juno didn't suck, but it's certainly not my cup of tea.
I enjoyed Juno.
It's got too much Michael Cera in it.
Yeah, it does. Stephen Moffat has revealed that we're going to have to wait. We're getting a new Doctor Who Christmas special this Christmas with the Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe. But we're not getting any new episodes again till the autumn of 2012.
Wow.
Yep. And he says the interview.
It's still
he
Matt
says,
Smith, right?
It's still Matt Smith. Yeah.
Okay.
Apparently, Matt Smith has no intentions of leaving anytime soon. Oh, so, yeah.
Did David Tennant leave, or was he asked to leave?
He left.
Why?
In interviews,
he
basically,
had a David Duchovny
he basically said that if he didn't leave now, they were going to have to wheel him out on a wheelchair. And so he decided that 3 years was a good amount of time, and that actually technically it was 4 years, and that he would go do other things and let someone else have a crack at it.
Cool.
If you look at like interviews and stuff, it was actually kind of neat of him. It's like, because if they don't cart me off now. And it was partly because I think Russell T. Davies was going to leave, so he said, you know, how about we just take off together.
Yeah, that's right, he did leave, didn't he? I forgot about that.
And we all love John Barrowman.
Sure, right? We do.
I mean, he is Captain Jack. And I just spotted this story, and it was awesome. I mean, you've watched Doctor Who, so you know Captain Jack.
Actually,
yet.
I've watched Select.
Have you watched Torchwood?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, awesome. Captain Jack is the main guy on Torchwood, and he is awesome. John Barrowman is, according to Wales Online, Barrowman, who is studying at the Scottish city's Radisson Blue Hotel, or staying there, while currently playing the role of Robinson Crusoe. Yes, he was playing the role of Robinson Crusoe in a Glasgow pantomime.
Naturally.
Was returning with his parents from a camp in Newcastle, dragged a fleeing teen to the ground in order to subdue him. The teen had just been ransacking a couple's room in the early hours of Thursday, and a hotel worker was punched. John Barrowman's account of the event was, "The concierge was trying to sort out my air conditioning. We heard this woman scream and shout, 'Stop him, stop him.' We saw this young boy running down the hallway. I told the concierge to chase him and to call the hotel operator and told him to block the staircase so we could get him. The lad had tried to get away with the staff elevator, punched the concierge, through the staff elevator, kind of punched the concierge. I grabbed the kid's ankles, yanked him to the ground, and then pulled him out into the hallway. I pinned him down. My tour manager then arrived, and three of us held him down until the police came." Now, this doesn't end here, actually, though, because Barrowman added that he'd offer the teen a backstage job on in his pantomime. He said, it was sad. He was only 14 or 15. I think he was on drugs, but I'd like to find out the boy's story and give him a second chance. Maybe he could work in the pantomime over Christmas and give him a sense of responsibility.
I should go mug John Barrowman. Maybe I get a job.
Yeah.
I totally like dig John Barrowman, man. That's just cool.
That is pretty cool. Now, he is gay, right?
Oh, yeah. Openly.
That's really neither here nor there, but it's still but something I didn't know.
He's, like, openly been gay for 20 years with his partner and whatnot. Uh-huh. And, he's just a really cool guy, I think.
That's one of those – that's a cool story. You always hear that kind of shit about, like, Harrison Ford and stuff. It's always nice to hear about it happening to people.
Well, my favorite story with him was over the whole back
Neil
in
Patrick Harris.
2010, they were talking about – there was the internet stuff about the gay man of the decade, and it was down to between him and Neil Patrick Harris, and they had sort of a Twitter face-off going on.
Really?
A friendly rivalry sniping at each other, and Neil Patrick Harris wins.
Yeah.
And then John Barrowman tweets out, says, "You know, it's a good day when you wake up and Neil Patrick Harris is on top."
Yeah.
And I was like, beautiful. Awesome.
That's pretty cool.
That's funny.
So.
Well, right on. It's cool to see that, you know, he's down to earth enough, and he's not just, like, suing the kid for all he's worth for inconveniencing him or whatever.
Nope.
So that's cool.
Let's see. I got some brief stuff. Apparently we're supposed to get a teaser for The Hobbit before the end of the year.
Oh, yeah?
They're not sure what yet, but we're...
Before the end of the year? That's a tall order.
I know.
Like, tomorrow's fucking December.
And we talked about last time about the whole Oscars thing, but like right after we recorded, of course, Billy Crystal was announced to host the Oscars like the next morning.
I like that. I mean, well,
he is the go-to guy, and it screams that whole, well, we only got 3 months before this thing. We need someone who we can count on. And hey, Billy, would you please do this?
There's obviously not a whole lot of validity to it, but there was a Facebook campaign to get the Muppets to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see that, but it's just not. feasible.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they,
I'd like to see him have a cameo, and I would see that happen.
I could totally see them giving away, like, the, you know, the best short or something, because, Muppets are short.
Or whatever, sure.
Yeah, but doing, like, a whole show, it just wouldn't be very pragmatic. I mean, there's too many crazy logistics, especially for a live show and for
a live show
that's in 3 months.
It would never, just could be impossible to pull it off. But
I think it could be done, but they couldn't do it in 3 months.
And on the same vein, Ricky Gervais is returning as the Golden Globes host.
That's cool to me.
And he got some flack for it last time.
Good God, yes, he got some flack for it. I mean, Ricky Gervais, like, he takes no shit from anybody, and he's not political at all. If he thinks somebody's a cocksucker, he's going to call him a cocksucker. And he was talking shit, you know, about the Hollywood Foreign Press at the Golden Globes, and, like, not in a ha-ha-ha kind of way, like a, you know, fuck you, you suck, I'm going to kill you. And same thing with, like, I know that he got, him and Johnny Depp got into it over it, and are still getting into it.
Nice.
And I think it's kind of cool because it shows the Hollywood Foreign Press has at least somewhat of a sense of humor about themselves. Because if you'd asked me last year,
it also sort of strikes me that Golden Globes are doing it to get people to watch.
Which is
fun. You know, it's like, oh, hey, there was some, you know, controversy around him, so hey, we're gonna have him come back, and you know, it'll be a big deal, and people will watch it to see what he does.
And I'm sure he's going to be on his best behavior, and it's going to be completely non-notable.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised at all at this point.
Nope. Let's see. Alan Silvestri has been signed to score The Avengers next year.
Yeah.
So he's doing the music for The Avengers. So that's cool. I mean, he did Back to the Future.
Yeah.
So, hey.
I believe.
And I think he did Predator.
Yeah. He's a. He's
been
like
around.
I bet you I could probably only name like a dozen to 20 fucking, you know, composers in Hollywood off the top of my head, and I could probably name 200 directors off the top of my head, so
good,
I guess.
And there have reports been flying around that casting of Ben Whishaw in Skyfall is that he is actually playing Q.
Yep. I looked up Ben Whishaw's filmography, never heard of a goddamn thing he's done.
Yeah, and the big deal about it is he's younger than Daniel Craig, so it's the first time that Q has been younger than Bond type of business.
That but is I'm like,
it doesn't matter.
All right, whatever.
I mean, if he, you know, like
I understand why they're not going with, you know, John Cleese, because they want to separate themselves from the early movie.
It also wouldn't fit.
Well, John Cleese wouldn't fit with the flavor of the new movie.
Yeah. Or he would fit so well, it'd be terrifying, because it would just be really weird.
Like, whoa.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that movie.
And I already mentioned Asteroids is coming. They're also working on a film version of Rampage.
Right on. The movie with the monkey and the...
Yeah, and the lizard and the big wolf dude. Yeah.
Loved that game.
Great game. Probably not going to be a good movie.
And the sad news, this just happened recently, was Anne McCaffrey died.
She did?
Mm-hmm.
When?
Like 2 or 3 days ago.
I didn't realize that.
Yep.
Anne
McCaffrey, writer of the Pern series, passed away.
Huh, that sucks.
Yep, so... There we go. And the trailers that came out that I spotted, obviously we talked about Snow White and The Huntsman.
Patrice O'Neill died the other day, the stand-up comedian.
Okay. He was one of the guys on The Office, yeah.
Yeah, and he was also on, he's a big thing in on The Office. Who the fuck was he in The Office?
He is the big black guy, right?
No, that's fucking...
No. Patrice is a big black guy, right?
Yeah, he is a big black guy.
He was on a few episodes of The Office. He was one of the warehouse staff.
He was. That's right.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's also a big...
No, he's not Daryl.
No, I was going to say that's
he was one of the warehouse
Frank
guys.
Frank Robinson is Daryl.
In the few episodes. I think it was not anytime recently. I think it was last...
Yeah, it was a while ago.
A few seasons back, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He died the other... He actually... I missed him, but in late October, he had a... fucking just massive stroke.
Wow.
And then he died, I think it was Monday, something like that.
Huh.
And he was 40, 41, something like that.
Wow.
It was not old.
Jeez.
But yeah, he died. So sucks.
Well, the trailers that came out, there was obviously Snow White and the Huntsman, which didn't look too bad to me.
Yes, I did see it. I just didn't really react to it.
There's Journey to the Mysterious Island with Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Yeah, it's the... Oh, yeah, God.
Journey the sequel to Journey's Journey of the Earth, yes.
This time it's personal.
it looks entertaining, although I never saw the first movie.
I saw the trailer.
I'm
small. Like,
The full trailer for The Hunger Games came out.
I saw that.
That looks actually pretty cool.
It does look pretty cool.
I'm not familiar with the books, but hey, movie looks pretty
sweet. When did I see a trailer for that I liked so much? I don't know.
The Muppets.
I did see a trailer for that. I also saw that.
Yeah.
But no, I saw a trailer for something.
That was just me sort of inserting the Muppets there.
Yeah, the Muppets.
It was awesome.
The Muppets was awesome. I was so happy about that. The Muppets was great. Such a good movie.
But that's all I got.
That's all news-wise. You got, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we talked Billy Crystal. We talked Reese O'Neill. I think we talked what we need to talk about Geekly Happenings.
Yep,
so stay tuned, and we will be right back with our main topic discussion. We are back. This time around, we are going to be continuing our movie genre discussion. This time around, it's going to be somewhat interesting list, I hope. I guess that's always our goal. But I think we might have actually hit it tonight, because tonight we're going to be discussing coming-of-age films. This was actually a choice of Ethan, our co-host. Why did you choose coming-of-age films out of all the genres that are available to you?
Well,
I didn't even give you a list.
No, you didn't.
I just said, what kind of genre. You're like, coming-of-age film. I'm like, okay, we haven't done that, so it's all yours.
Yeah. So. Well, I guess I chose it because it's just like, it's just one of the most heartwarming kind of genres there are, and like,
sure.
And I know, I like action movies, and I like, the suspenseful mindfuck movies and stuff, but there's something nice about just sitting down and, like, being able to relate to a character throughout an experience.
I hear coming of age movie and I immediately go boring.
Really?
I'm going to turn my brain off and drool.
You don't like, I get into movies, connect to the characters.
And I don't.
And I can do that in movies that aren't coming of age movies. Although I can make arguments that some movies are coming of age movies and that coming of age is cross genre.
It is. It's a very cross genre.
And that's something that's going to be apparent in my list is I don't know if there's going to be a single coming of age movie that I would really relate to. Because I have, several people growing up in the 50s and the 60s and the 40s and stuff like that, and I did not grow up in any of those decades. Most of those, all of those I wasn't even alive in. I think of coming-of-age films and the genre, and I don't think of it necessarily as a hard-hitting genre or anything, but I do think it does have its place. There are some really good movies in the genre.
I would agree.
I think it's good, and I think it's...
See, and I would argue that the movies that are solely coming-of-age movies are movies that I find to be pretty much boring as hell.
Well,
I like it more when they're crossing genres than when they're a comedy or when they're science fiction, when they're something like that, because then there's interesting elements to it.
Well, that's a common thread in all of our genres. Mm-hmm. As a lot of these movies that we like a lot, they do touch several other genres, but sometimes the main thread of it's going to be something like a... like a coming of age movie or something like that. May I help you? You're standing over there looking. But it's not one that I necessarily respect, but I don't dismiss it as a whole. I mean, it's not snuff. So
I got the wrong list then.
Okay, so
shit.
Coming of your list goes
coming of age snuff films.
Snuff coming of age.
None.
So I said it's not snuff. I'm just saying that
by the very definition, no coming of age movie would be a snuff film. Because there's no coming of age there.
That's a good point.
The coming of death.
the coming of death or the coming of the cock or whatever.
Oh.
Whoa.
That's what she said. But yeah. Okay, well, I guess we don't have a whole lot to say about this genre. So why don't we just get into our list, Ethan? What is your number 6?
All right. Diving in.
You can talk.
Now starting the list. Holy shit.
I didn't get here till 9.
Holy shit.
We're going to get moving if you quit interrupting us. Law school meeting.
Uh-huh. Law school informational session.
And I had to deal with a space on a space rocket.
Ooh.
Okay, Ethan, what's your number 6?
All right. Well, my number 6 is the original Karate Kid.
Yeah, see, I didn't put it on there.
I toyed with putting the new one on here. Like the new one's actually not too bad.
I really like the new one a lot.
It's a good one. The original, you know, I go back to the original as part of a coming of age thing from my childhood type of thing, and that's what the movie is. You know, it's
for the awful cartoon.
No.
Oh, it was so bad. But I watched the shit out of it.
But the Karate Kid, you know, Mr. Miyagi and all that good stuff. And,
yeah, I mean, I definitely watched the Karate Kid.
It's definitely, to me, it's a coming-of-age movie where you have this kid who has to grow up. And, you know, he has to move across across the country from, I think it's Jersey to California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sort of having to learn to deal with
bullies,
you know, growing up and bullies and
Cobra
Kai and the crane kick. and on top of it, you get the wax on, wax off stuff, and you know, get a classic movie out of the Karate Kid. So it's, I mean, not much to say about it. It's my number 6 on here. You know, there's some others that you know are out there. I mean, Karate Kid. You could argue Karate Kid 2, 3, and Next Karate Kid, and then the new Karate Kid movie they did are all, you know, they're all coming-of-age movies.
Sure, they are.
So, I mean, I guess he came of age, you know, 3 times before
before he got it right.
Before he got it right, yeah. Uh-huh.
Excellent.
But I think the first one is good in that you know, it has that sort of coming-of-age mentality to it, as far as, you know, learning to deal with growing up, bullies, and all that good stuff. And so,
yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, it's definitely got its merits as a coming of age kind of, you know, martial arts genre kind of deal.
And it was pretty much single handedly responsible for that karate explosion in the 80s.
That's true.
Happened, and yeah, I mean, that's not a good thing.
Who can forget American Ninja?
Oh, I can.
There was ninjas with lasers.
I had gotten lasers. It, thank you very much. But
Lasers.
Well, excellent. That's your number 6?
Yep.
Slagathor, what's your number 6?
my number 6 I have is Goonies.
That is my number, we'll call it 10. Or, I'm sorry, 9.
Your number 9.
Yeah. Did not make my list.
Really?
I did not see Goonies until I was maybe 23.
And I haven't
seen, by that point, it was too late.
I haven't seen Goonies since I was like 23. So I don't really feel...
I don't think I've seen it since I was 23 either.
I don't really feel compelled to talk about it too much, but I do like it a lot.
I don't have that like connection to that movie that other
a lot
people,
of people
have. But I mean, I understand it. You know, if I had seen that when I was, you know, 8 years old, would have been awesome. But
it was just
not a movie that I saw. But I mean, it's a great movie.
Rolling. Yeah.
You know, speaking of
Sloth, love Chunk.
Everyone loves Chunk.
Fucking Sloth and, you know.
Truffle Shuffle.
It's the Truffle Shuffle, yes.
Yeah, any
memorable things?
Truffle Shuffle.
I can't.
No, it's Slagathor.
Slagathor, do the Truffle Shuffle.
You have to be specific or else we get confused.
I like it. I don't have a lot to say about it. I probably haven't seen it in almost 10 years, but I did watch it quite a bit growing up or something like that, and it isn't fresh in my mind. I think I've seen it playing, and there are some people that really like it, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good video games based off of it, too. Goonies 2, the video game was awesome.
I never played. What is this on?
It was the Goonies 2.
Yeah, the Goonies 2.
Yeah, it was a sequel to the movie on NES.
Really?
It was a pretty good game.
I forget what it was, what the subtitle of it was, but yeah.
This time it's personal.
Yeah, this time it's personal, the revenge.
Let's see. All right, so we're getting my list. I have, like, I think I know what my number 1 is, but other than that, why don't we just go with the movie that it has been a while since I've seen it, but I did like it an awful lot, and it was the 1973 American Graffiti, directed by George Lucas. I like that movie probably more than
you want to.
Well, no, because it's a really well-made movie.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's a really well-made movie.
Not a movie that spoke to me.
It didn't particularly speak to me because I didn't grow up in fucking 62. You know, I grew up in the 80s and shit.
Sure.
But I don't know, just like, that's one of those passion projects that we often talk about. George Lucas is a big fucking fan of race cars and, mm-hmm. you know, the music from that era. And I'm actually a big fan of music from that era. I love mm-hmm. 50s and 60s music. And it was just a lot of fun. You know, I mean, because everything seems so important, but it was just one summer night before they're about ready to go off to college and, you know, the one last hurrah. And I just think it's a fun movie. I think it's incredibly well made. I think it is George Lucas's best directed movie, and that does sure. beat Star Wars, all the Star Wars.
Sure.
It's a really good movie, and I like it. So that's.
I really can't say that I've seen it.
It's a good movie. It's a really good movie. That's why it's put on my number right. six. What's your number five, Ethan?
My number five is probably it is a huge classic. It's Rebel Without a Cause.
Ah, yes.
Not on mine.
I'm a big fan of that movie, actually.
I actually just saw it for the first time maybe 6 months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But I got to see it in my film class, so I saw it on the big screen.
Who's in that?
James Dean.
James Dean. It's the big James Dean movie. It's the one that he is remembered for with Natalie Wood.
Giant. No, that's just me.
I haven't seen Giant either.
Me neither.
Real good.
For me, Rebel Without a Cause, obviously it's a bit dated now, but it still has merit as far as, you know, it still has merit with that you know, the teenager sort of coming to grips with really growing up and becoming an adult and dealing with adult-oriented things. And
it's a really, really good movie. Do not get me wrong.
Yeah.
It just rings false all the way through it. But it was just something that's common with movies.
You see, for me, watching that movie is sort of being a teenager wrapped up in a microcosm of this, of like 2 days in this kid's life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's cause you have all those elements of, you know, being, of rebelling from your parents and sort of not understanding what you want to do with your life and where you're going, what's happening. And then, so you rebel, do your own thing, and then you have to grow up and deal with adult situations. And to me, that movie sort of screamed out to me when I was coming up with this list. I was like, gotta put Rebel Without a Cause on here.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the quintessential coming of age films. I just think that there's other ones that speak to me a little bit more. But no, James Dean obviously was an icon, and he made four movies, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he was Oscar nominated for 50% of his career. That's probably something that's never going to happen ever again.
Yeah.
So that's cool. It's a good movie, and it maybe just doesn't occur to me, even though it should, because it is very much that quintessential coming of age movie. But cool. Slagathor, what's your number five?
I have here E.T. as my number five.
It's my number seven.
It's my number three.
Love E.T.
It's good film.
Talk about a classic from childhood. And I was hard-pressed as far as E.T. was. I was hard-pressed, you know, E.T. and to put – I put E.T. on here over Super 8.
See?
Because they're very similar in feel.
I actually have Super 8 on my list.
I remember distinctly – E.T. is one of the first movies I remember seeing movie theaters.
Yeah.
I remember going to see it when I was a kid. We lived in Omaha at the time, and there was a scare about razor blades and candy that year. That was the year that. And so instead we went to the movie theater in costume, and I believe I was dressed as Oscar the Grouch.
Right on.
I think that was
– I love trash.
Okay. Exactly. And E.T. I mean, who can't – if you're a child of the 80s, if you grew up and saw that movie as a kid, how can you not love E.T.?
Yeah. I was 13 or 12.
It's a movie with an alien in it that is not trying to destroy humanity.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not trying to eat your brain. And it's – I mean, ignoring the obvious parallels with Jesus Christ in there.
Sure.
I mean, E.T. was Jesus. That. There we go. And ignoring the whole debacle about the walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
Get over it, people. The movie is one of those that really captures, and Super 8 was the same way for me. It really captures the wonder of being a kid.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because, I mean, he's dealing with a huge thing. Yeah, this is an alien, like, an alien creature.
And he's just passing off like, this is awesome, I'm a kid.
I know,
kid. Like,
I have my own alien. and often imitated and never really...
Yeah, not really replicated.
Because, you know, there's Mac and Me and, you know, other movies that just failed miserably to capture this, a boy and his alien.
Yeah.
And but this is really one of those first times that I can recall in a sci-fi movie where you had an alien that was... not necessarily benevolent, not necessarily, you know, not necessarily wanting to destroy humanity, but he was just sort of there. I mean, like, they were botanists, you know, I mean, but they never really deal with this overarching.
Spielberg has said before that E.T. was a plant.
Well, there you go.
It's like a cognizant, up and running around plant.
Yeah, and but the thing I'm going for, though, is the thing that really spoke to me as a kid is that movie is entirely from the kid's point of view.
It's
entirely... a movie where the kids are the protagonists. The kids are you know, the kids know what the right thing is.
Yeah.
Without any hesitation, they know the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Whereas the adults think they know what the right thing to do, but the kids know that the adults are just wrong.
Yeah.
Plus, it features D&D at the beginning, which is always fun.
Yeah, that is awesome. I really like in that film the way it kind of immerses you into that child's point of view. I think there's one scene that I really, really like where his brother calls him penis breath at the table.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it just cracks me up because it just makes me think of my childhood, you know, being a dick to my sister,
well,
you know?
And you, honestly, you don't see things like that in movies a lot.
Yeah.
Of that obvious family banter that goes on, you know, in that atmosphere.
It's, yeah, it's something hard to replicate.
Brothers. And anyone who's grown up knows that that happens, you know?
Yeah.
And even where you have good movies, they don't do little things like that. And a little thing like that really sort of endears E.T.
to
me.
Yeah.
So, yes, and E.T. was Jesus.
Yes.
A plant Jesus, apparently.
Yes.
But Jesus.
You mean Aslan?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
So, Aaron, what was your number 5?
I'll tell you when I figure it out, you motherfucker. No, actually, my number 5 is a movie that I wouldn't be too damn surprised if I was the only one here that's seen. But it's not like it's obscure or anything. It's just not something that strikes me as a movie that Ethan would ever see. It's a 2002 Chris and Paul White's film about a boy starring Hugh Grant. Have you seen it?
Nope.
Such a good movie.
I've heard of it.
But yeah, I have heard of it as well.
It's one of the only Hugh Grant movies that I can stomach, and I don't want to fucking kill him in it. Same deal with Love Actually. Hugh Grant's in that also, and I like that also. About a boy, it's the story of Hugh Grant's character. I don't remember his name, but he's fucking Hugh Grant. But, you know, he plays this guy that's grown up.
The kid
up.
Is fucking Hugh Grant?
No.
Well, that is a fucked up movie, dude.
Sounds like.
He said no snuff.
I didn't say he was killing Hugh Grant while fucking him. That's not snuff. He's playing the typical Hugh Grant character, but he's had a little bit more of like a edge to him than what you're used to from the...
Less charmingly befuddled.
Yeah. Well, he played this guy that grew up without any responsibilities because his father wrote a Christmas song, some fictional song called Santa Super Sleigh. So it'd be the equivalent of you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or something like that.
Yeah.
And he lived off of the royalties of that alone. And so he never did anything. And I don't remember how he comes to this point, but he decides it's a good idea to pretend like he has a kid to go meet single moms because he can have, you know, promiscuous sex with them. And since they're so wrapped up in their kids, they're not going to really care that he just kind of kicks them to the curb. And this whole fucked up situation happens with a girl that he goes to this, that he goes to meet up, you know, through the single parents club thing. One of her friends is played by Toni Collette, actually. And she's a psychopathic, crazy, depressed woman that ends up trying to kill herself. And he ends up having to take care of her young – it's weird and circumstantial, but he ends up having to take care of her young son named Marcus, I think is his name. And it's strange because I said earlier about how, you know, it's, you know, your typical Hugh Grant role, but it's got kind of got more of an edge to it. And I think that was kind of exemplified in the – one of the first scenes of the movie, some friends of him are asking him to be the godfather to the daughter, the baby they just had. He's like, you know, I'm honored. I'm truly, truly honored, but that's a fucking horrible idea. Because the only thing I'm going to do is I'm gonna raise this kid, try to keep the hell away from her until she's 18. Let's face it, at that point, I'll probably just try to shag her. I mean, it was just like this. I don't know. It was kind of weird because, like, the whole coming of age thing, you know, through helping Marcus through his teenage angst and wiles and stuff, he kind of came of age himself because he had never grown up before. So there's this interesting parallel happening with the two characters. It's a good movie. I mean, I'm not, you know, well, I mean, I like it. I would recommend people check it out. I don't know if Ethan would really go for it, but that's okay because he's weird like that.
Yep, I am weird like that.
But it's a pretty good movie, and I chose my number 5. So, Ethan, what's your number 4?
My number 4 is one of my most favorite underrated movies of all time, and I know you love it. It's Gran Torino.
That's a good movie.
That is a fantastic freaking movie.
I don't know if I think of that as underrated.
Oh, I think it is. I don't think it got nearly as
wonderful, but
it's a wonderful movie. And anyone who actually bothered to go see it figured out that it was awesome.
I saw that motherfucker.
Can't say I've seen it.
Great fucking
Clint fucking Eastwood.
Clint fucking Eastwood.
And for me, the coming of age is for the kid in it, and whose name now escapes me, Lou or whatever.
The boy or the girl?
The boy. The boy.
Oh.
To an extent, the girl too.
Yeah.
And even you could even argue that it's Clint fucking Eastwood as well, Kaczynski.
Absolutely,
Walter Kaczynski. Walter Kaczynski. Get off my lawn. But to me, it's a great, you know, obviously it's paralleled with this whole business with his family going on and you know, them not being respectful and him being this guy who's out of place in this neighborhood that he's lived in forever. That. The Koreans are moving in. They're not really Koreans, but are bugging him because he's a horrible, horrible racist. But he ends up having to take
he's
on.
He's a funny racist.
Yes, he's a funny racist.
Tao.
Thank you. Yes.
Tao.
Tao is one of is this boy that lives next door to him as a teenager who's getting involved in gangs, and they try to steal his Torino, his Gran Torino car, which is in a pristine, working, beautiful shape.
But, you know,
he catches him in the act and chases him off his lawn with an M1A1 rifle.
Oh, jeez.
And Tao comes back and apologizes, and through various things, he ends up having to work off his debt to him, saying, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the whole connection going on.
He worked off the debt for him because he chased off the gangster kids.
Oh, okay.
In the titular get off my fucking lawn speech.
Yes.
Scene. Because he catches him and then he runs away. And then the next day the gangster kids are giving Tao shit about not stealing the car, and they get into a fight on his lawn, and he comes out with his fucking gun and get off my lawn, and they go to him, oh, thank you, and he's like, fuck off, and, you know, get the fuck out of my face, you fucking slants. And,
yes.
And you know, it's he's a horribly, horribly racist guy. But
throughout the movie, they end up connecting. He and Tao becomes more of a son to him than his actual biological children.
Yeah. Pieces of shit.
Yeah, they're
especially his
horrible.
Grandkids. I want to kill his grandkids.
Pimp slap him right back into
especially
anyway.
That fucking little bitch, whore, slut, cunt, bitch.
Yes.
His granddaughter, she's horrible.
It is a great movie.
I love that.
It is an absolutely fantastic movie.
Once again, it didn't occur to me as coming of age, but it is.
Yeah, and I think it ranked high on my list because of the sort of the multiple coming of age, and it also is one of those that a coming of age movie doesn't necessarily have to be, hey, it's this young kid who comes of age. No, it's because I would argue that it's, you know, Clint Buckin Eastwood's character. He comes of age and he's, you know,
same
in
deal
his
with 80s. The Battle Boy and Hugh Grant, who was in his 40s or whatever.
So that would be
good
my
movie.
Number 4.
Wonderful movie. I highly
awesome
recommend it.
Awesome fucking movie. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, go see it right away.
Yeah.
Yep.
I wasn't a huge role in it, but I liked John Carroll Lynch. Mm-hmm. He was the barber.
Uh-huh.
I love the scene when they took Tao to get the haircut.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, give me a haircut, you fat Italian piece of shit, or whatever it was.
Yes.
Great fucking scene. Great fucking scene.
But that brings us down to Slagathor's number four.
Right? All right. My number four is, I don't know if you guys will think this is an odd choice, but this is something that I really liked. It's School of Rock with Jack Black.
I liked that movie.
It was really, a good movie. It was a good movie. And
another
movie
sort of evidence that, you know, the coming of age doesn't have to be about kids.
Exactly. It's a lot. A lot of it is about Jack Black.
All those kids are more mature than him.
Oh, yeah.
It's a real sweet movie.
I just really enjoyed it because I don't know, I always feel like I can connect to Jack Black when he's playing the stupid kid or the stupid guy who's growing up and stuff. And like, same with Be Kind, Rewind. I really like that movie. A lot of people did not.
I was not a fan of that movie.
I didn't see it.
That was Michel Gondry, right? The guy that did Green Hornet and Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind, which I liked a lot.
That's a really good film. But I just really like School of Rock, one, because it's rock, because, like, you know, Jack Black has his own flavor when it comes to music, for sure, and that's
greatest
nice when it's
the universe, Tenacious D.
Exactly, it's a wonderful band, and you know, it's just, I guess that's just how I feel. Is I was really excited about Jack Black's role in it, and you know, I like to see him come in as. It's like he's posing as a substitute teacher, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And like a long-term substitute teacher, like, because his roommate.
Yes, it's his roommate is the substitute teacher, and he answers the phone.
Yes.
And he needs a job. So
he takes it.
Yeah.
And he's just this horrible, like, irresponsible doofus.
I'm hungover. Do you know what that means? Yes. Yeah, it means you're drunk. No, it means I was drunk yesterday. One of the best lines in that movie. Yes. Yeah.
No, that is one of the movies, one of those movies that, you know, me personally didn't look interesting at all. And then I ended up seeing it, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
To me, it's movies like that are often a surprise. And that one was actually quite good.
Yeah.
You know, it's evidence that you know, these coming of age type of movies, they can be entertaining, and I would, you know, that one's more of a comedy.
Yeah.
Has the comedy elements and the sort of off kilter love story.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Off kilter. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a good one. It's a good
one. Movie. I like it a lot. Is there any down to my number or something?
Four.
My number four is Crossroads. No, I'm not talking about the Britney Spears movie. It was the 1986 Walter Hill movie with Ralph Macchio. Is the
with
movie
the Karate Kid in it,
with the Karate Kid in it. I mean, it was a movie about the fucking blues and selling your soul to the devil. And I happened across that movie on HBO or some shit. You know, probably early 90s. Mm-hmm. And
I think I remember when you happened upon that movie.
I don't know.
Because you talked about it.
I liked that movie quite a bit, but no, I was a teenager when it happened in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember you talking about it, and I remember you talking about it at one point.
It's a good movie. I like it. The story of Ralph Macchio, he plays a something of a musical prodigy. You know, he's a teenager. You know, Ralph Macchio is one of those fucking weirdos. You can never pinpoint his age.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was playing a...
He's you know, 98 now and looks like he's 12.
Yeah. But he, you know, he's a musical prodigy student that's at Juilliard, and you know, he's learning to play classical guitar. But his real love is the blues, and there's a legend about the actual blues guitarist Robert Smith. Well, whoever, Robert Smith. That there was, you know, that he wrote 29 songs, and there's actually the 30th song is out there somewhere hidden. And to help pay for his tuition at the school, he works at an old folks' home, and one of his residents is a I don't remember the name of the actor, but it's a black man by the name of Willie something. He's an old blues man, and he tells Ralph Macchio's character that, you know, he knows the song, and if he helps him get back to the crossroads, and he'll teach him the song. And you know, so they go and they live the blues lifestyle on the road, and they you know, they trade his one acoustic guitar for an electric guitar and a gun and a, you know, a hat and an amp and all this fucking shit for one guitar, but that's neither here nor there. They run into this girl on the road, and you know, the kid loses his cherry, and you know, it's, you know, very much a coming of age story. I like the movie a lot, and I think I might put it on here because I just don't think of it as a movie that a lot of people have seen, because it didn't do too well. But I like it. I think it's a good little movie. It's certainly worth a check out on HBO or something if you run across it. But
yeah,
it's 1986, directed by Walter Hill, Crossroads.
Cool.
Yep. So gets us down to Ethan's number three.
That was E.T.
That was E.T. So, Slagathor, what was your number three?
My number three is Super 8, which is essentially E.T.
That
which
is essentially my...
It's a great sequel to E.T.
Yes. Yes.
Number something. That is my number...
It's a great
seven.
Movie.
It's my number... Where the fuck is it? Eight. It's my number eight. I've only seen it once, and obviously it just came out, 6 months ago, if that long?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't
just
long
hit DVD
ago.
Last Tuesday.
Yeah, so it hasn't really had time to grow on me, but I did like it
and I actually would like to watch it again, because I only saw it the once in theaters.
It was a
great movie.
That strikes me as a movie that could have really good special features.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Spielberg's legendary for his attention to special features and details.
And then you also got J.J. Abrams.
Who's also legendary for his special features.
And talk about that movie's essentially a love letter to the Amblin Entertainment, Spielberg films the 80s, and to films like ones talked about, Goonies and E.T. Definitely a movie that is supposed to emulate that, and that movie does a great job.
I've said it on the show before, but I'll say it again. I'll never forget the first time I saw that the trailer, because I'm watching it, and I'm seeing all this stuff, and I lean over to Rachel, and I say, this looks like some sort of 1980s Steven Spielberg alien movie. And then it says, from executive producer Steven Spielberg. I'm like, well, no fucking wonder. So that's pretty cool. I mean, it definitely nailed what it was going for, and it was a really good movie. It was one of the better movies I saw this year. So
And it's definitely one
it's
I need to check
three,
out again.
It's my number eight.
It's a great movie. I
really like it just because it has this very, close and, personal level of development on the main character's part, with the relationship between his father and he's still coping with the death of his mother. He's still in this kind of period where he hasn't come out of it.
Yeah.
And so this is what he's coming out of, in the film is he's coming out of his shell. He's becoming, a more confident person. He's learning the ways of the world. Literally.
Once again, it was cool to have a alien in a movie that wasn't trying to destroy the world.
It did kind of kill some shit.
Well, it killed shit because it was trying to get home.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it wasn't it didn't, show up to kick the fuck out of everybody.
Yeah. The bad guy in the movies is the military. That sort of theme is very prevalent in E.T.
Yeah.
It's that, that's the kids know what's right.
And it's
Super
the same 8, with this one.
Super
you know?
8 does it entirely. And the thing really I really dug about Super 8 was the movie is, for the most part, 98% of the movie is all from the point of view of the kids.
Yes.
Which is great. And they're also believable kids.
Definitely.
That is a huge thing for movies,
I think they were
like this.
Yeah. Some best kid actors I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, and they had to be believable, and you had to really buy that they were kids going through this.
Through this, yeah.
This awkwardness, event, this thing, and they're also believable kids in that they've got other stuff going on in their lives that affected them. And with the death of his mother is obviously the big setup in that movie.
Yeah.
Your first introduction to his father is when he throws the drunk guy out of the wake,
Was the opening scene them going up on the thing to take down the accident number? Like they had the, It wasn't the opening scene when they were going up there on the sky lift to change it from whatever
like
to
98
one.
To 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a great but cinematically that's a great way of telling you what's happened without
you what happened.
Yeah.
Telling you
right,
what
exactly.
Happened. Yeah.
It's doing what movies should.
Yeah. Yes. It's one of those things that assumes you as the viewer are not stupid.
Yeah.
Super 8's a great one, and I saw it came out last week, and I'm really would like
to
check
it
out.
We haven't yet, though.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good movie. It's one of the better movies I've seen this year. So that brings us down to my number three.
Your number three.
This is one that I wish I hadn't put so high on my list. Not because I don't like it, because I like it. I like it a lot. It's just that I don't know how much I could populate a conversation about it. It's been years since I've seen it, and I don't think Ethan's seen it. I'm almost positive Slagathor has. In 1971, Peter Bogdanovich filmed The Last Picture Show. It was Jeff Bridges' first Oscar nomination.
Yep, haven't seen it.
Such a good movie.
Yep, I have not seen that.
It's a story about a couple of what?
Ethan was giving me eyebrows when I said I have not seen that, as if I have not seen a lot of movies.
I haven't seen a lot of movies.
movies.
It's fine.
But The Last Picture Show, it's a wonderful movie.
Compared to a lot of people, I've seen tons of movies compared to lots of people.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. So.
But no, I haven't seen this one.
I believe I wanted you to see it.
You probably have, and I just tuned you out.
You typically do. Mm-hmm. It's neither here nor there, but one of the things I really like about it is I like the use of music in it. It's one of those movies where the music in it is always generated from somewhere on screen, you know, be it a car radio or that's a radio cool. or a band playing or something. That's mm-hmm. one of those film conventions I like a lot.
Yeah, it really reminds me, what you're talking sort of reminds me of the movie The Commitments.
Well, no, I mean, it's not like that at all. It's a story about like a little dust bowl of a town, mm-hmm. and they have one movie theater in town, and the theater's closing, and so they're going to go see The Last Picture Show,
okay.
and all this shit happens in this night when they're going to go see The Last Picture Show, the show at this theater. It had a 23-year-old Jeff Bridges. It had a super-duper-duper-duper young pre-crazy Cybill Shepherd. I can't remember all the people, and I just know that I watched it a couple of times, and I was really, I was like, this is cinema. You know, it was just like a good movie, and it's just one of those ones, like, you know, like E.T., you know, you walk out of it, you know, maybe with red around your eyes, but it's a good-feeling movie, and Last Picture Show, you know, it kind of shows the stuff that sucks about growing up, you know,
yeah,
like mm-hmm. about the fact that everything changes, you know, the whole the movie theater shutting down. They were growing up with this movie theater, and now, you know, part of their childhood is, you know, decaying just like the world around them, and blah 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 blah. It's an interesting movie, and I think anybody should check it out. I think Peter Bogdanovich might have died recently. I don't know why, but maybe I'm wrong, but it's a movie I like a lot, and I just don't have a whole lot to say about it, but I did like it a lot. So it's
cool.
Number three.
I guess that brings us to my number two, and I'm surprised he hasn't popped up before, but to me, my number two is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Half-Blood Prince,
yes.
Because I hated that movie.
It's probably one of my least favorite of them, but far as looking at it coming of age-wise, I think it's the movie where Harry Potter finally gets his head out of his ass and grows up.
I disagree. Hmm. I think that's Order of the Phoenix. I think that he
I think in Order of the Phoenix, really, he's dragging his feet on it too much.
But he pulls his head out of his ass in the end.
Well, I mean, the series as a whole is definitely a
the whole thing.
The series
yeah.
as a whole is very much.
But if I had to, I have to pinpoint one movie. It's Half-Blood Prince, where he finally grows up and accepts responsibility.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
Well, yeah.
At the fucking end of it,
uh-huh.
like the last 3 seconds of it, and then
yeah,
you would have the Deathly Hallows ones as the actual. This is what happens once he's come of age.
See, and yeah. well, we're talking coming of age, and that's why I would say it would be the Half-Blood
yeah.
Prince.
Whatever.
Say what you
will.
We've talked at length about Harry Potter.
Order of the Phoenix is the teenage angst one. This is the, well, this sucks, I gotta grow up now.
Yes.
Movie.
So for me, that's the coming of age one. I mean, yes, the whole series is about coming of age and facing down what
Magic.
Your destiny and blah, 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 blah. Crookshanks. What?
And Crookshanks.
And Crookshanks.
It's facing coming down of age and blah 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 magic and Crookshanks.
Okay, but that is the movie that I think for me is when the coming of age actually finally happens. Is Harry is avoiding his responsibility as best he can.
Absolutely.
Until the end of that movie, when Dumbledore dies.
Have you seen this movie? Since you've seen Deathly Hallows Part 2?
No.
Much better now.
I would have to would have to watch them. I want to get them on Blu-ray at some point. So.
Right there,
I got too much other crap going on.
But,
so.
I remember one of our reactions to it and Deathly Hallows Part 1 is it's all leading to something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, now that, you know, we've... Well, I mean,
now that we've had the payoff with,
you know,
the,
we've
with
had
the Deathly Hallows 1.
I mean, yeah, now that we've had the payoff, we've seen it, and it was all good, and yay! You know, it's just kind of fascinating to see the build-up to all this stuff
yeah.
now. I mean, it just feels like, you know, less of, you know, God damn it, I want to see what happens to where I want to see how it happens.
Sure.
This is one of, like, the better how it happened films in the series.
Yeah.
As a, you know, how done it instead of a who done it or
sure.
whatever. So.
All right, cool.
It's a good one. I didn't consider Harry Potter for this, A, because I didn't have any problems building this list, and B, we've talked the fuck out of Harry Potter on the show.
There is that. Well, that was my number two. Flagathor.
What's
your number two?
My number two is it's kind of a thinly veiled coming of age, but it's just a film that's so like kind of heartwarming. It's got that feeling. It's A Christmas Story.
Yeah,
oh, I totally say that's coming of age. Yeah.
Absolutely coming of age. Love that movie.
Fudge.
Love that movie.
Yes, it's just like.
Be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Hey,
commercial. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. You know, he's realizing things.
Hey, and
believe it or not, we talked about that one at length.
That was the Parker family.
Yeah, that was the part. We talked about that on the Christmas show last year. We talked.
Uh-huh.
We reviewed it, if I remember right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, great movie. It is a great movie. I love
Fragile.
It.
Fragile.
Must be Italian.
Be French. Or must be Italian.
Must be Italian.
Yeah,
there could be a bowling alley in here.
Yeah.
You know, the deed.
It might be thinly veiled, but it's absolutely 100% a coming of age.
I wouldn't even say it's thinly veiled.
No,
I
mean,
it's totally a coming of age.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, it's
this, it's just got that heavy, just holiday.
Uh-huh.
There's a sequel.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Horrible.
It's not.
I don't want to watch it.
It came out like 10 years later.
Yeah, different,
it was not
different
very good.
People. Different. All
it's
around.
Very forgettable. Never
yeah.
watched it.
It was I think they went on a vacation. Or
yeah, it's
something.
A summer vacation
yeah,
one.
It was
no.
It's not.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that sounds not good at
vacation
all.
Vacation Story. If I think it was called Our Vacation Story or something like that.
Yeah, no,
it was not.
Christmas
good.
Story is a lot better.
It's you know, it's just once again the whole like relationships with the people you know and having
oh, yeah.
become more.
And
we
talked about from the point of view of the kids.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm so glad you went this route and not you know Home Alone.
Yeah. Oh God!
I liked Home Alone when I was 10 or 9 or whatever when it came out.
Yeah. Never a fan of Home Alone.
And then
Home
we found
Alone.
This movie. It was like, hey,
this is a good movie.
This is a good Christmas movie. Yeah. The charm of that movie, and we've talked about it, you know,
yeah.
at length in our Christmas one of it. The charm of that movie
is
yeah. that it's from the you know a little what's his name
Frank
Ralphie.
Yeah.
I wanted to say
Parker.
Frankie for some reason. The little Ralphie Parker's point of view and. It really is a great, great. It really speaks to you as a how a kid
smacks
visualizes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, visualizes
oh, yeah.
Christmas and mm-hmm. and whatnot, and how he.
Some people like it, some people hate it, but I and yeah, whatever. But I kind of like the fact that it's all about the materialism.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
Because that's what kids are thinking at Christmas.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's not about Jesus. It's not about you know getting to see family. And it's about he wants his motherfucking
BB gun.
Red Ryder BB
with
gun.
The compass in the stock, man.
The compass in the stock. Yes.
Yeah. And this thing that tells time. I mean, and that's. I'm sorry. I mean, it makes me a horrible person. But I don't remember growing up and you know really wanting to see my. Relatives, I wanted my fucking BB gun or
your exactly. G.I. Joes or
well,
whatever, you know.
My Eternia play set for my He-Man
uh-huh.
or whatever.
Snake Mountain, baby.
Snake motherfucking Mountain or the Ghostbusters or like
uh-huh.
any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, that to me is, I think it's why it was my number one favorite Christmas movie when we talked about it was it, I could absolutely relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the only Christmas movie I can think of that really reminds me of Aaron Hoover as a child. So, I mean, it's a great one. It's a good choice for number two.
Yeah.
Totally. Aaron, what's your number two?
My number two? All right. My number two is one that, like, at least my family and someone in my circle of friends, I'm kind of infamous for my love of this movie. I probably like it more than it deserves, but I do like it an awful lot. I've been watching it constantly for almost 20 years now. Jesus Christ. But I'm sorry. I'm just 1993 being damn near 19 years ago just blows my fucking mind.
Yep.
But it's the Lousy Hallström directed What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
That's a good one.
Wonderful, wonderful movie. If you have not seen it, you should. People that like to naysay Leonardo DiCaprio, fuck you, watch this movie. The kid is a very, very, very excellent actor.
He's finally coming out of that, coming out of the whole Titanic.
Yeah, I mean, this is you know, this
just in time for them to re-release Titanic in 3D.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That is happening. But this is a movie that I saw in the theater, and I think I've owned some iteration of it ever since. You know, I think I have the Blu-ray or the DVD over there, but I do have a copy of it. I don't know why I relate to it. I don't have a brother or sibling or anything with Down syndrome. I was not nearly as poor as these people. My father did not commit suicide. My mother was not really obese. But there's just something about the...
And this movie also featured, you know, Johnny Depp before he was Johnny Depp, you know.
This is after 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, it was. But, he's Johnny Depp.
Now he's motherfucking Johnny Depp. I knew who he was when I saw the movie, before I saw the movie.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, because of Nightmare on Elm Street and, you know, other stuff he'd done. But, yeah, you're right. Johnny Depp is Gilbert Grape. I mean, he's the title character. Leonardo DiCaprio in his first Oscar nomination. It had John C. Reilly, who's always really good. Crispin Glover, fucking Mary Steenburgen. A wonderful, wonderful cast. It's a story about this, and I can't remember the name of the town, but this very, very poor family living in a town in Iowa or Indiana or some shit like that. Gilbert Grape is pretty much forced into being the patriarch of the family. Like I just said, his father committed suicide, you know, years prior. And his mother is morbidly obese. She's a shut-in. She never leaves the house. His youngest brother, Arnie, is played by Leonardo DiCaprio. He's, what's the politically correct term? He's a fucking retard. But whatever, Down syndrome, excuse me. He's got Down syndrome, and he's a pain in the ass. I mean, you want to give Gilbert Grape a sainthood for what he puts up with in this movie. I mean, Arnie's a little shithead, but, you know, he's also endearing. You know, 'cause you know that he doesn't know any better. He's, one of the subplots of the movie is his 18th birthday party, and yet he's running around acting like he's seven or whatever, six. Mm-hmm. And, it also has Juliette Lewis as Becky. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie that I really think everybody should see. And it's interesting because if I had to guess how old Johnny Depp was when he made that movie, probably mid-20s, late 20s, and you know he was but coming of age, so to speak, and you know, he finally got to over the course of the movie. I mean, it's one of those movies that doesn't have like a saccharine, unbelievable ending, but it's not a happy ending either. It's hard to explain. If you haven't seen it, absolutely check it out, but it's a movie that I'm pretty famous for how much I love it, because I used to do my Arnie impressions back in the day, and I think it's a great movie. Everybody should check it out. That's why it's my number two.
It's a good one.
Yep.
All right, so we're to my number one, and I'm surprised this movie hasn't come up yet.
Stomach hurts. What is it?
It is not Stomach Hurt. It is, you know, you mentioned...
The sequel's better.
The sequel's better?
Like the Stomach Hurt?
Stomach Personal.
Yeah, Stomach Hurt 2. This time it's Personal.
The revenge.
The return of the revenge.
The second
time. My number one is, so when you mentioned we were doing coming of age movies, this one is the first one that popped up in my head, and I'm surprised we haven't touched on John Hughes yet, but it is, of course, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Okay.
I love that movie.
I like that movie,
it's
too.
Damn hysterical, and it's entirely a coming of age movie for... Cameron.
And I am a fan of that movie, too. I've seen that movie umpteen billion times, but I'm from the school that Ferris and What's-Her-Face are figments of Cameron's imagination.
Okay.
I'm a fan of that theory. I don't think it's true, but I'm a fan of that theory. I like
it's
it.
There's
theory,
a theory that he's an
it.
Insane person?
Yeah, the Cameron's an insane person. He wakes up, he's sick, he's in bed with a fever, and he starts hallucinating, you know, Ferris as the person he wants to be, and I can't remember the chick's name, but, you know, the girl that he used to be, and, you know, Ferris is doing all the stuff that, you know, that he can never do, but, you know, it was ultimately him that knocked the car out of the window, and, you know, it forced him to come of age. It's a fun theory. I don't think there's any basis in it.
No,
it's a fun theory.
Yeah, it's a fun theory. I disagree with it, but hey. But to me, it's the quintessential coming of age movie.
And
I mean, it has.
Yeah,
it has,
I get it. I understand what John Hughes's, you know, what his legacy is, and I understand that he's so famous for all the movies he's made. My favorite John Hughes movies now and always will be She's Having a Baby. I fucking love that movie.
Mm-mm.
Really, the only John Hughes movie I think I've seen is Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. You've seen 16 Candles?
Nope.
Okay, 16 Candles is good.
Yeah, I mean, they're good movies, but don't get me wrong.
I mean, John Hughes definitely coming of age.
He was
of the coming of age movies I've seen, this one sort of takes the cake for me as the one that speaks most to me.
Totally dig it. Don't relate. Because first off, wasn't Matthew Broderick like 75 when he made that movie?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, he's yet another one of those people that age has always been hard to nail down.
Yes.
Sorry. But yeah, it's a good movie. I like it a lot.
But yeah, that's my number one.
Exciting.
Exciting.
It's a good movie. I definitely,
I love it.
I can see it.
Very good movie.
All right, Slagathor.
Slagathor, what's your number one?
All right, so my number one film isn't like necessarily a big title or one that's renowned for being a coming-of-age film, but it's something that's really relatable and kind of like, I don't know. It's just, it's a smaller film. It's SLC Punk.
I like that movie.
With Matthew Lillard.
It's Matthew Lillard, one of the only times that he turned in a good...
this is his only good performance. Scooby-Doo.
He was great.
He was a good Shaggy.
Well, he wasn't acting in Scooby-Doo.
What?
He wasn't acting in Scooby-Doo.
He was just being Matthew Lillard.
I think
Lillard.
He was acting in Scooby-Doo.
You know, he was okay in Hackers, just of how bad Hackers was.
Yeah.
He fit the par there.
But I can hardly call it a number one, but it's a good movie.
I just look at it, and it's like the things they go through are exactly the steps of finding, like, adulthood to me. And it's like, all right, we're going to drop out of life for a while and do acid and fucking just smoke weed and do drugs.
I do not relate to it because all the characters are fucking idiots.
Yeah, I mean...
Especially Matthew Lillard. I mean, he had the fucking... idiot flag on his head all the way through the movie, and you know, by the end of it, he does grow up a little.
Yeah, he does. He definitely grows up a lot, you know. He embraces his culture and, you know, the things, the expectations that have been brought on him by his family, and he realizes this is something that's important.
I don't know, he was so fickle and shallow, I could see him, like, not being into any of that stuff anymore, like, 6 months later.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's an interesting movie. It's one of those ones that, you know, like people are like, yeah, I like the Scooby-Doo movies. I like Matthew Lillard. He's a really good actor. And I'm all like, you should watch SLC Punk and then we'll talk, because I don't think you've ever seen him act until you've seen this.
Yeah, definitely. Those his best role, but...
I mean, there's a little bit of... I can't remember his name. Whatever his character's name was in that movie. There's a little bit of that character in his character in... Whichever Scream was the first Scream, you know, because there's a little bit of that insanity and that, you know, that lack for authority. But
yeah,
it's an interesting movie. Have you ever seen it, Ethan?
Nope.
I'm sure.
Oh, wow.
Stacking, putting it on the fucking shelf at Miracle Video, because
probably
I do. I absolutely do.
It has a very recognizable title.
Yeah, Matthew Lillard with
like
green
front,
mohawk.
Yeah.
In front of it. So okay, movie.
So yeah, that's my number one. I don't know. There's something about it that just speaks to me, you know, like, because it's like he's in this oppressive culture, and you know,
my number one is Ethan said something about when he heard that we were doing coming of age films. This was the first movie that entered his mind when he was talking about Ferris Bueller's Day Off. When we were talking about doing this, and I knew that we're going to be doing coming of age films, the first movie that popped into my mind was. My number one is the 1986 Rob Reiner film, Stand By Me.
Okay, yes.
I love that movie.
Never seen it.
Well, I don't know. Fuck you. But I'm just kidding. You ought to check it out because it's one of those.
It's one of those that I am aware of that I should watch at some point.
First off, it's
one
of those,
in the pile, but it's a large pile.
It's one of those movies that I saw growing up because you can't have catnip. It's awesome. But it's one of those movies that I grew up with, and, you know, as I got older and I started becoming more aware of people's queer, I was like, Jesus Christ, there's a lot of people in this movie. The older Will Wheaton is played by Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Will Wheaton's the main character. Then you have, you know, Corey Feldman, and you had River Phoenix, and you had Jerry O'Connell, and you had his older brother is played by John Cusack. And the main punk is played by Keith Sutherland, and it goes on and on and on. I mean, there's just a ton of people in it, and he is playing with the catnip. That's so funny, a 10-year-old cat acting like a kitten. But at any rate, one of the things that really makes me like this movie a lot is something that I said earlier about the believable children characters.
Yeah,
I mean, because, you know, they're running around talking about Annette Funicello's tits, and they're smoking cigarettes, and they're sneaking beers from sneaking beers from their drunk dad, and they go off on this adventure to find a dead body, which is something that I probably would have done. If I knew there was a dead body around my house, I would have gotten my friends together and gone off and looked at it.
Yeah.
And when I say, you know, there's always like that fucking scene in movies with kids when they're smoking where they
where the adult catches them, and they make them smoke a whole bunch or eat them, and they throw up. And I kind of like it how, you know, these kids were just...
Filters are for
pussies and guys my age. I like it how they were smoking in the movie, and, you know, they were all like, yeah, I love to smoke. I love to smoke after a meal, best meal of the day. And, or, you know, it's just... But I like how it's not made a big deal of, because it's just shit they do. I mean, it's not a movie about kids smoking. It's about, you know, kids... going off
being kids.
Yeah. It's a wonderful movie. It's one of those movies that proves that Steven King's work is almost always turned into movies best when it's adapted from a short story.
Yeah.
This was adapted from a short story called The Body, I think. You know, same deal with Shawshank Redemption. That was also a short story called Rita Hayworth from the Shawshank Redemption, I think. I once again, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, 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 wonderful movie. I really like it, and I think you should see it, Ethan. I'm not saying it's going to change your life or anything, but I thought River Phoenix was amazing in that movie, and he was, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 years old when he made it, and he was a very, very good character. Believable characters. I mean, you know, obviously you had your archetypical characters, because you had the leader, you had the nerd, you had the fat one, and you had the crazy one. And, I think it's a really good movie. I think everybody should check it out. But it's my number one.
All right. I guess we're down to the rundown.
We're down to the rundown.
Well, my number 10 was Good Will Hunting.
I took that off my list, but I did have it on there at one point.
Number 9 is Star Wars.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess it is coming of age.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Number 8, Wizard of Oz.
That, yep.
Number 7, The Graduate.
You know, I don't like that movie at all. At all.
Well, it's coming of age.
It is.
Number 6, The Original Karate Kid. Number 5, Rebel Without a Cause. Number 4, Gran Torino. Number 3, E.T. Number 2, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And number 1, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Excellent. Slagathor.
Okay, I have to get this in order in my brain.
So I got a pin.
All right. I'm going to say I have 9, but I can easily come up with my 10th here.
Yep.
And that's totally going to be – I had it on my brain just a second ago. Old School.
I like Old School.
Old School is a good film.
Wait a minute. I hate Old School. Excuse me.
Oh, okay. It's an okay film.
So you said Old School, and I was thinking High Fidelity. I don't know why.
No.
I like that movie.
Not that. My number 9 is Waterboy.
Ugh, the Adam Sandler thing?
Yes.
I liked that movie when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's on the bottom of the list. Space Jam as 8.
Who came of age in Space Jam?
Daffy Duck.
Yes.
I love
for
Daffy
sure.
Duck.
He did.
I am the human personification of Daffy Duck.
I think it was... Michael Jackson, who came of age.
Michael Jordan?
No, Michael Jackson. When he saw it, he was like, look at all the kids in this theater.
It's time to grow up and get Parkinson's, yes.
Michael Jackson had Parkinson's?
Sure. I'm thinking Michael J. Fox now.
Just roll with it. There's plenty
of 11:30. Give me a break.
Okay. Okay, my number 7 is Empire Records.
That's a fantastic
movie. That's a good movie,
movie
actually.
Fantastic
yes.
movie.
That almost, I had that on my list for a while and then ended up taking it off, but that is a great movie.
Yeah. I thought about it, but I didn't put it on here.
I really enjoy that movie.
My number 6 is, what did I say, Goonies.
Yep.
My number 5, E.T. 4, School of Rock. 3, Super 8. 2, Christmas Story. 1, SLC Punk.
Right the fuck on. My number 10, 1939, Wizard of Oz. My number 9, I love Wizard of Oz. You know I love the Wizard of Oz.
I know you love the Wizard of Oz.
I haven't seen that film.
My number 9 is the 1985 Goonies. My number 8 is Super 8 by J.J. Abrams. Number 7 was E.T. by Steven Spielberg. Number 6 was American Graffiti by George Lucas. Number 5 was About a Boy. Number 4 was Crossroads. Number 3 was The Last Picture Show. Number 2 was What's Eating Gilbert Grape. My number 1 favorite coming-of-age film was Stand By Me, the 1986 film by Rob Reiner. And that's going to bring an end to our coming-of-age film discussion. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our outro section. And we are back with our outro section. That was just our conversation about films. Not a whole lot of surprises there, but...
I think we all came of age a bit.
We all came of age a bit. And
I know I did.
I hope that you grew up a little bit just by watching this and realized that life does suck, no matter what.
The weight of the world has officially crushed my spirit.
It's impressive.
Yeah, dog. But it's fun. I liked having Slagathor, a.k.a. Ethan, on the show. And also, it's always fun talking with Mr. Ethan. Next week, theoretically, we are talking about samurai films with our old friend Noah. We had
him on talking about westerns.
Oh yeah, that was funny. We did have him on talking about westerns. But yeah, so that should be cool. I still have to verify, but last I heard, we were going to be doing samurai films with him. I have a sneaking suspicion that Kurosawa is going to come up on that list.
Once or twice, yes. As predominantly the samurai movies I've seen are Kurosawa films.
I'm actually going to try to make a list without Kurosawa for poops and giggles.
I say that, I'm going to try to go watch some non-Kurosawa samurai movies, but I have no time to do so, and I would be lying. So, obviously, I'm just going to be basing it on the movies that I've seen.
Yeah, and I might actually look into it a little bit more.
I hope I've seen 10 of them.
Like, would Last Man Standing count as a samurai movie?
No.
It doesn't even barely count as a movie.
Does Batman Begins count as a samurai movie because there are samurai swords in it?
Yes.
Sweet. Highlander it is.
Katanas aren't samurai swords.
Get out. Yes, they are.
Not really.
They're pretty much.
Yes, they are.
Not really, samurai. Yeah. Okay, whatever.
But they have the little tiny ones.
That's a Kanto. A Wakizashi.
The one they use for Sepulchre.
No, a Wakizashi is the long one. That's what a samurai sword is.
No. A Wakizashi is the short sword.
No, the Wakizashi.
A katana is the long sword.
No, Wakizashi is the center sword.
The Tanto is the dagger.
The Tanto is the dagger. And then there's
Wakizashi is the short sword.
Nodachi is the long
sword. Nodachi is the gigantic sword.
That's the one that Kikuchiro, whatever his name was, using.
You've disgraced yourself by not knowing.
Yes, you must commit seppuku.
Seppuku now.
Give me a Wakizashi. Give me a fucking...
you need a Tanto.
Give me a Wakizashi.
Let's say that word some more. Wakizashi.
I'm going to do fucking seppuku with a Nodachi.
Sweet. We'll do that live on the show next time.
Excellent. Okay, so I got confused. But katanas suck. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit more. Well, probably not. I think I probably talked about
they're the most ultimate weapon on the planet.
You know my stance.
What about the gun?
Next to the gun.
and magic and A-bombs. No, my problem is like this bullshit mystique
that
has been built up about
they are good swords. Don't get us wrong.
They're incredibly well-designed
swords.
I think if you have a sword, it's a good sword.
Huh?
If you have a sword, it's a good sword.
That's not true at all.
I would say that's a good sword. I'd say that's a good sword.
Maniacal laugh.
Maniacal laugh.
Like you put those
I gave away that claymore.
Oh, that thing was awesome.
What was it, $12 claymore?
Something like that.
Was it actual metal?
Oh, yeah.
Each pound was like $5 or something. It was really heavy. It was kind of cool, though, in its own way.
Uh-huh.
It was big and in the way. I was actually talking about those stupid Highlander wannabe swords. Like, yeah, those sucked. I still have my Ivanhoe around my joint, so...
It has rust on it.
Yeah. Just like...
You suck.
Yeah. But until we talk about samurai movies and katanas and stuff like that, it's been a lot of fun talking with you, Ethan. Maybe we'll get you back on the ship when we're less weird with our equipment, but
sure.
Thank you for
being
on the
show. Been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah. It was fun, and sorry about last week, and we'll get this edited together, and I'll let you know about it when we get a post.
Bonus.
But do you have anything to add, anybody?
You can find me on CthulhuandWine.tumblr.com. If you like how
it's
stupid I am. Oh, that's...
C-T-H-U-L-H-U.
Are you sure?
There we go.
Backwards.
No.
How do you say Cthulhu backwards?
Cthulhu backwards.
Mixie Spitlick backwards. Kill Tipsy-sum.
Kill Tipsy-sum.
Kill Tipsy-sum.
Kill Tipsy-sum.
Ah, shit. But, I guess until next week, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Let your geek flag.
It's maniacal
laugh. Maniacal laugh.
Maniacal laugh.
Maniacal laugh.
Maniacal laugh.
Maniacal laugh.